Welcome to Nonviolent Direct Action, where we examine the societal and personal ramifications of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s insight that to passively accept an unjust system is to cooperate with that system and thereby to become a participant in its evil. You're listening to Episode 15. I'm host Jack Gilroy, and my guests today are Ken Mayers and Tari Koff. On March 17, 2019, two United States military veterans and members of Veterans for Peace, an international peace organization based in St. Louis, Missouri, entered Shannon International Airport in County Clare, Ireland, to inspect United States weapons, troops, and planes, breaking neutrality laws of Ireland and international laws supporting the right of nations to not engage in or support warfare. The two Americans, Ken Mayers, a former U.S. Marine officer with 11 years service, and Tari Koff, a former U.S. Army paratrooper, were arrested by Irish police and held without bail in Limerick Prison for weeks. Their passports were confiscated, and the two are now being prevented from leaving Ireland. Both men would like to return to their families in the United States to await their trial in Ireland, which may not occur for 2 or 3 years. Ken is 82. Tariq is 77. Edward Horgan is a retired Irish Army major who spent 22 years service, including United Nations peacekeeping service in the Middle East. Horgan has been on a team of fair election inspectors in Eastern Europe, Asia, and Africa. Horgan has written that, and I quote, "It's likely that the Prime Minister of neutral Ireland, a small nation, was coerced or otherwise persuaded to allow U.S. military and CIA aircraft to refuel and spend money at Shannon before headed to wars of aggression in Afghanistan and Iraq, thereby breaking Irish neutrality that the vast majority of Irish want to keep. In fact," says Horgan, "nearly 3 million United States troops have passed through Shannon Airport, breaking international law and Irish neutrality." Horgan notes that the United States, in doing its war crimes, does not have to use neutral Ireland, since many air bases are available in NATO countries, including the United Kingdom. Since 2001, Irish activists have been engaging in nonviolent civil resistance to the American presence in Ireland. Some have been acquitted of damage to U.S. aircraft. Others have gone to prison. 7 members of Veterans for Peace went to Ireland in March of 2019 to witness and to do nonviolent direct action at Shannon. Their purpose was, as always, to educate the public as to crimes hidden by the United States and Irish governments. With Ken Mayers and Tari Koff outside of the fence into Shannon Airport were Mike Hayes and Inya Anderson, two U.S. combat veterans who had passed through Shannon on the way to war in Iraq. Also with the Solidarity Group was former Veterans for Peace President Michael Ferner and Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, 27 years at the White House. Now we're pleased to introduce Ken and Tariq to our podcast. We'll start with Ken Mayers. Ken, you're a 82-year-old, am I correct?
That's according to my birth certificate.
All right. And you're also a former United States Marine officer. And, you know, Americans usually hear the old line that once a Marine, always a Marine. And yet, you've taken this action in opposition to the United States military. Tell us, you know, exactly what you and Tariq did to lead you into a situation where your passport, you've had to surrender your passport to the Irish government, and the actions of March 17th at the Shannon Airport in Ireland.
Yeah, I'll go back a couple of days before the 17th. There were actually 7 of us who flew over here together, 5 veterans and a filmmaker who arrived separately, and Ellen Davidson, our inveterate photographer and organizer. We arrived on the 15th and had a press conference and some other events in Dublin, and then came up to Limerick. And on the 17th, on St. Patrick's Day, Tarek and I made our way onto the airfield at Shannon Airport. Shannon Airport is a civilian airport, but the United States uses it as if it were a U.S. military base. Since 9/11 in 2001, about 3 million U.S. troops have passed through Shannon Airport with their weapons. In addition, weapons have been shipped through Shannon, and rendition flights have gone through Shannon. All of this is in violation of Ireland's declared policy of neutrality. Under the Geneva Conventions and the Hague Convention of 1907, there are specified obligations of a neutral country. When a belligerent enters a neutral country, the neutral country is supposed to seize the belligerent equipment, personnel, and quarantine them until the belligerency is over. The Irish government hasn't been doing that. Been an organization called Shannon Watch for most of these years, which has been protesting the use of Shannon Airport as a U.S. military base. And Veterans for Peace in Ireland, as well as Shannon Watch, invited us to come over and help raise awareness of what's going on.
Would you say your job, Ken, was to actually do what the United Nations and other peace groups have not done, that is go in and inspect and see exactly what is on board the aircraft?
It's actually the obligation of the Irish government to do that. The law enforcement agency in Ireland is called the Gardaí, and the Gardaí are supposed to inspect such planes, but have not. And so we went on the airfield with the express intention of approaching an aircraft so that it would be inspected. We had been on the airfield about 20 minutes or so when they finally arrested us. We said, you know, we're here to try to get you to do the job that you're supposed to do. And they said, well, we understand your point and we actually sympathize with your cause, but you've got to do it legally. Well, Shannon Watch and Veterans for Peace Ireland have been trying to get them to do it legally for years without effect. And actually, there have been 15 people who have done what we've done. The first person who did it in 2003, Mary Kelly, actually managed to get to a plane and inflict a couple of $1 million damage on it with an axe. Then there was another group of Catholic workers, it was called the Plowshares Five, that inflicted $2.5 million worth of damage. Ultimately, Mary Kelly, when she finally went to trial, she was found guilty in the first instance, but then was found not guilty on appeal. The Plowshares Five were found not guilty in their trial. There are two other cases pending of pairs of people who went and did what we did, and their trials are coming up a year and a half from now, so that we're in a great tradition of trying to raise awareness of this issue. All the other folks who've done it were immediately released on bail, but they decided that we were not going to be released on bail. We went to Limerick Prison for 13 days.
I want to ask you later on about Limerick Prison, but I don't want to lose the point either here about the trial that will be coming up. Are you satisfied with the courtroom being near Shannon?
Well, we will be appealing to have the case moved to Dublin, as the other cases have been moved to Dublin.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think that's an important point.
And when we were awarded bail, the conditions were that we had to surrender our passports and pay 2,500 euros each as surety and not go near any airport in Ireland. We're actually going to the High Court tomorrow to appeal the bail conditions and try to get our passports back so that we can return to the United States to await trial.
Now, appealing the bail decision, could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, the process is that once bail is set, if you have a basis for appeal, you can appeal to the High Court to get the bail conditions changed. There are actually three courts involved in our case at this point. There was the District Court, the Court of First Instance that we were hauled into after we'd been arrested. But the district court, it's mainly confined to fairly low-level offenses. They felt that this one was sufficiently serious that it's been moved up to the circuit court, which is the next court level up. And it's referred to the circuit court in Clare County, which is the county that Shannon Airport's in. We will be appealing to get it moved to Dublin. On a separate track is the bail case. Bail is set in the High Court, and so to appeal bail, you have to go back to the High Court. We've submitted our affidavits explaining why we think the bail should be changed, and we'll be going into court tomorrow with our solicitor to make the case.
Now, could you explain to the listeners why it would not be a fair trial in Clare County?
Well, I can't get into the exact statistics. Maybe Tarek will have the statistics. But the simple fact is that Shannon Airport is a very important economic factor in Clare County. Both the employees through the airport and the adjacent industrial area heavily dependent on U.S. business, so that workers there are threatened if they shut out the United States. That is, they feel threatened. We don't believe they really would suffer consequences from it, but that's the sentiment in Clare County, is that don't touch Shannon Airport. And so we don't think we could get a fair trial there.
You're listening to Episode 15 of Nonviolent Direct Action. I'm host Jack Gilroy, and my guests today are Ken Mayers and Tarek Koff, two U.S. citizens being prevented from leaving Ireland because of their civil resistance at Shannon International Airport in Ireland. Ken, could you sort of backtrack a bit and tell us how you, as a person with a convert to nonviolence, is that correct that somehow, somewhere along the line, there was a transition? Were there any epiphany moments? Were there things that really turned you to being a resistor instead of a warrior?
Well, it's interesting because in a lot of cases, friends that I have that have made the conversion, there has been one of those Paul on the road to Damascus kind of events. That was not the case with me. It was a steady learning process. The Marine Corps paved my way through college. I took a Marine Corps commission when I graduated and was as gung-ho as the typical Marine Corps second lieutenant. And then for the next 8.5 years while I was on active duty, the Marine Corps showed me what the United States really does in the world. And it wasn't pretty. The first inkling I had that something is wrong here was when we had a joint operation with the Chinese Nationalist Marine Corps on the southern tip of Taiwan in the spring of 1960. And it rained for 2 weeks solid while we were out in the field. And when we'd finish our sea rations at night, little Chinese kids would show up almost as if they sprang out of the mud, begging for tin cans to patch their roofs with.
Right.
And I thought, what's going on here? How can people live like this? Especially, how can our allies be living like this when we have so much? And that was just the first inkling. When I finished with 3rd Marine Division, went back to Camp Lejeune, 2nd Marine Division, and we were deployed to Vieques, as was the case with all Marines at various points. And in Vieques, we were told to set up a perimeter, a live fire line across half the island and not to let anyone pass. People tried to pass. We were to detain them so the police could arrest them. And if necessary, if they broke through us, we should shoot them.
Wow. Now, this Vieques is the testing grounds in the Caribbean, a part of Puerto Rico?
Yeah, it's about 8 miles off the eastern tip of Puerto Rico, and for decades, the Marine Corps owned roughly half the island as a training area. That's no longer the case, thanks to resistance from Viecans and Puerto Ricans, and Veterans for Peace was part of that resistance that finally got that shut down. But in those days, the Marine Corps owned half the island, And these are American citizens, you know, and how can we deal with them that way? We found out later that that was one of the areas where they were training Cubans for the Bay of Pigs. And some of the lucky ones who got off the beach at the Bay of Pigs were brought back there to a field hospital.
You didn't stay in the Marines then. This is 1960, and your obligation, you know, was already completed, but you decided to stay in for 11 years.
Yeah, I was a career Marine officer. I was going to make it all the way, I thought. But the Marine Corps kept showing me things, and ultimately I was a company commander of a company of communications intelligence Marines attached to a naval security group and NSA field activity on Okinawa in August of 1964, when the so-called Tonkin Gulf incident took place.
Did that have some play on?
That was kind of the final straw, as far as I was concerned. But at that time, the term stop loss hadn't been invented yet, but the practice had. And the only way out of the Marine Corps for me at that moment would have been through Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. That was not appealing. I was, at that point, our first child was on its way, and that didn't seem like a viable option for me. But when stop loss was ended, I spent a brief period in Vietnam in the summer of 1966, got back to Okinawa and submitted a letter of resignation, and was released from active duty at the end of 1966.
Congratulations, 50 plus years later.
Yeah, so I spent 8.5 years on active duty and accepted a reserve commission, figuring if there were ever a legitimate need for my services, I wanted to be available. So I was 4 years active reserve until the Marine Corps didn't care for my peace activities and threatened me with court-martial. And that's in a whole nother story, though. But I get to sign my letters, Major USMCR retired.
Have there been other activities that you've gotten into that has resulted in arrest?
Oh, yes. I've been arrested. I've lost count of the number of arrests, but all of them have been resolved pretty quickly. This is the first time I've actually been in a prison for a couple of weeks.
That brings up an interesting question here. Wondering, you know, what has been the attitude of the Irish people toward you? And specifically, what about the fellow inmates in Limerick Prison?
The Irish people have been tremendously supportive. There's hardly been a one that we've had a conversation with who has opposed what we've done. Most every Irish person that we meet says, "Well done, lad, well done, lad." And we have Veterans for Peace caps, which make us identifiable. And people come up to us on the street all the time. And Kathy Kelly was over here with her partner a month ago or so, and we spent a weekend in them, and we were up in a pub in Lisdoonvarna, and ordered some food and drinks, and the waiter came over and said, "This is on the house. Thanks for what you've done." And we were at a Mongolian barbecue in Dublin a couple of nights ago and went to pay, and they wouldn't take our money. Oh. We've been stopped and asked for people want to have selfies with us. I mean, the response here has been absolutely astonishing. And there's a poll that shows something like 82% of Irish people strongly support a policy of neutrality, so that in some ways it's not so surprising. But the warmth of the Irish people and the wonderful support they've given us has really been most impressive.
What about the guard ID, police officers?
The guards in the prison and the prisoners as well were all supportive. The guard treated us well. We were never even handcuffed when we were arrested. And the guards were friendly and good-natured, and the prisoners were helpful and helped us know the ropes in the prison. So very different than an American prison or American jail. In a typical American prison, as you know, it's all wide open with bars. The cells in Limerick Prison are essentially private rooms, and you're locked in them for well, 18 hours a day, but there's privacy. They even have television in the rooms.
So you kept up on international events as well as...
No, we didn't watch much television, but we did read.
Could we get Tariq on for a minute? I'd like to get back to you again with some other questions, but if we could hear from Tariq, that would really be good.
Hello, is this Jack?
Yes, Tariq, and I just want to say thank you for your service at Shannon Airport.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack.
You know, I just kind of wonder, I've read about you as being a former American United States Army paratrooper, and, you know, like Ken taking an oath to defend the Constitution, you had to be kind of a gung-ho guy to be falling from the sky for the U.S. Army. Before you move on too far, could you give us some information as to what brought about the transition from a warrior to a resistor?
Well, I was a young man when I enlisted, quite young. I was only 17, and I thought that the 101st Airborne, I volunteered for Airborne because I had read a lot about their exploits during World War II, and I thought, well, that's what I want to be. You know, there was glory there, there was honor, there was respect, all of those things, which during my 3.5 years in the military, those qualities were tarnished a little bit, let me say. And when I got out of the military, the Vietnam War was already underway, but not really rolling. They hadn't yet sent the 101st Airborne over there. It was shortly after I got out that my outfit was actually sent over. And the more I found out about the war, about the atrocities that were happening on a daily basis, about the fact that the war was not a mistake, was calculated for a long time before I even got out of the service, back when the French were still there, the more I turned against American policy and the happier I was that I was not sent over there to kill or be killed. You know, it wasn't that I was afraid.
And you're still pretty young at this stage. You're still in your 20s, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So you had a pretty early transition, and it wasn't after 64 years of age that you came up with that.
No, it was an early transition, that's right. And the more my eyes, once your eyes open, you really can't close them. And I didn't want to close them because I wanted to see the truth in all its aspects. And as I kept my eyes open, I saw more and more that was not admirable about what this country had been doing for many years, actually.
You're listening to episode 15 of Nonviolent Direct Action. I'm host Jack Gilroy, and my guests today are Ken Mayers and Tariq Kauf, two U.S. citizens being prevented from leaving Ireland because of their civil resistance at Shannon International Airport in Ireland. So what did you do over the years to show your expression? I know you're the editor of Peace in Our Time, the Veterans for Peace newspaper, which is really excellent. And that's not just throwing accolades around loosely, because everyone that I know really respects the work that you guys have done on that. But what did you do in the post-60s, let's say, period, after that really seminal year, 1968, when the whole country seemed to be falling apart? Where were you then, and where were you afterwards on American involvement in foreign countries?
Well, philosophically, I was very much opposed to it. I was involved in resistance. I was living at that time mostly in Miami, in the Miami area. I was a lifeguard for a number of years on the Miami Beach Patrol, and eventually got fired from that, not because of any dereliction in my duties as a lifeguard, but I think it was because of my political positions, my anti-war position, which was seen as unpatriotic and so forth. So that was what I was doing then. Eventually, I was involved with some fairly radical groups and eventually was investigated by the FBI after I had moved back up to New York. But fortunately, that investigation sort of petered out after being interviewed by some agents. Then for a while, I got involved with a meditation group, actually, that I thought was relevant. It was a sort of a spiritual group. They had spiritual ideals. There was a teacher and so forth like that. And for a while backed away from my activism, but didn't give up my feelings about the politics of the country. Eventually, I left that group and got back into activism, and for the past 13 years, have been involved with Veterans for Peace.
I have noticed, Tariq, that you're not only involved with Veterans for Peace and not only the editor of Peace in Our Times, but you've traveled to a number of places around the world. Could you sort of summarize why you did this and something about what occurred when you were at one or more of these places?
Well, there are a number of places where the U.S., as you know, has its footprint, and that footprint is painful to many people in places like Okinawa, Jeju Island, South Korea, and here in this country, such as Standing Rock, Ferguson, so forth, and other places where militarized police use their force to keep down legitimate resistance to some of the policies that the U.S. has, environmental or involving civil rights, whatever. But anyway, as far as overseas travel, we organized a group of veterans to travel to Palestine to resist what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinian people, also because we felt that the United States had a role in that, since they were funding the Israeli military to the tune of $3.5 billion a year, and are still doing that. And you see all the support that comes from our government for the policies of the Israeli government, which we oppose. So we felt a solidarity with the Palestinian people. We also traveled to Okinawa, where people were resisting the building of yet another U.S. Marine base that was destroying the natural environment in Oro Bay. People had been resisting that for something like 13 years, so we joined them, we joined their resistance. And the same thing was true at Jeju Island and when we went to Standing Rock. And the reason that I was instrumental in organizing these veterans groups is I believe in international solidarity. I believe in the solidarity of people connecting on a physical basis, a real human basis. I believe that's very important. And that's one of the motivations that brought us here to Ireland, besides the fact that we were invited here. And when we do go to these other places, like Okinawa, Palestine, Ireland, we're invited there. We don't just pop in and drop in like the 101st Airborne. Here we are. You know, we have contacts. We communicate with activists on the ground there, and we are invited. So that's, I hope I've answered that question somewhat.
You have, to a degree, but you have so much more to offer, I'm sure. But back to the Irish involvement and your activity there. I guess the first question people might say is, isn't this for guys who now claim to be nonviolent, sort of a violent thing to cut into a metal fence and go into property that is not your own? How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, that's the alleged thing that we did, that is said that we did, cutting through the fence at Shannon Airport to get onto the airfield. But besides that, I don't feel the destruction, and this is very small destruction of property, what you're talking about, is violent, especially when the purpose is to prevent or expose a much, much greater violence. And when you look at what those 3 million troops, as Ken told you, that have been going through this since 2001 with their weapons and the rendition flights, you are talking about a violence that is massive. You are talking about Ireland being complicit in the deaths of up to 1 million children, in the destruction of countries, in the destruction of families and communities all over the Middle East. And we see what an uproar is in the Middle East. So if we did cut through that fence, and I'm not saying whether we did or we didn't, but if we did, to view that as violent as opposed to what we were seeking to expose and draw attention to is, it gets into the absurd. You know, so we were charged with destruction of property. And I would charge the Irish government and the United States with being complicit in the destruction of life and countries. So you have to weigh the two.
It is kind of surprising because the Irish seem to be so much into human rights and justice. They had one of their presidents that became the United Nations president at one time, Mrs. Robinson. And right down the line, you would say, why don't the Irish start to take action against the Americans? Why is that? Why is it that they seem to be reticent, the Irish government, to stand up to the bully?
I'm glad you said that, because we do have to make a distinction between the Irish people, who the vast majority of respect and want their neutrality to be honored and do not want to be involved in these wars, you know, and the government. And unfortunately, we see people getting into government, with a few exceptions, who sacrifice their integrity for either the dollar or prestige or the connection, you know, that gives them some power. And they fail to represent the wishes of the people. And that's what's happened here. And Ken was mentioning the support that we were getting from the guards at the prison. Just to give one small example, these are the guards that are supposed to be involved with enforcing the law. And the law says that these planes should be inspected. Okay, they don't do it because it's their jobs and the dictates come from above. But so often, they would let us know, either overtly or covertly, that they supported what we were doing. And that has been the case throughout our 4 months in Ireland, where the people have been so supportive. And then when you talk to them about it, they say, it's the freaking government. They complain, the government is corrupt. That's what they say. We're dealing with a corrupt government that doesn't represent us.
Yeah, we can understand that, I guess, being from the USA.
We sure do understand it. And it's very unfortunate, but it exists all over the world, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, where you have government that doesn't respect the wishes of their people.
You're listening to episode 15 of Nonviolent Direct Action. I'm host Jack Gilroy, and my guests today are Ken Mayers and Tariq Kauf, two U.S. citizens being prevented from leaving Ireland because of their civil resistance at Shannon International Airport in Ireland. Could you kind of tell us what to expect tomorrow? Tomorrow's supposed to be a pretty big day for you guys. Thursday, that would be July 11th, 2019.
There are three possibilities, Jack. The most unlikely possibility that I see is that the judge will say, well, these are pretty nice fellows, and I think they're honorable people. We will just give them back their passports, and we will trust that they will come back for trial. Of course, that is actually true. Not only will we come back for trial, but we would have to be stopped somehow from doing that, because we want to be here. We want a trial. We wouldn't have done what we did if we expected to get off scot-free and without some repercussions. And if a trial is one of them, we welcome it. So that's highly unlikely. The next also unlikely possibility that I think is less likely but still possible is that the judge will say, I'm sorry, I'm not amending the conditions, these bail conditions, and they will have to stay here in Ireland until the trial. That's also, I think, unlikely. What Ken and I and our solicitor feel is the most likely possibility is that the judge will agree to amend the bail conditions in lieu of a increased surety bond. In other words, we already have €2,500 each in bail bond, and we feel that they will probably ask for a serious increase in that in order to return our passports. So those are three possibilities. I don't have any expectations. I refuse to set up any expectations. Whatever comes down will come down, and I feel that we'll deal with it. whatever the of those three options come down. Of course, we do want to go back home. Mainly, we have family obligations. We have people there. That's where we live. But also because it's wrong that we are kept here without our passports. It's absolutely wrong. I mean, we did not commit any type of major crime. In fact, I don't consider it a crime at all. But if you wanted to consider it a crime, it certainly was not on the level of armed robbery or violence or anything like that. We were trying to expose a much, much greater crime. We were doing our duty as international citizens not to go along with these crimes. These are serious war crimes and crimes against humanity that are being facilitated through Shannon Airport. And we feel we have an obligation to speak up in whatever way we can and to act in whatever way we can to expose and prevent it, to not be silent. And that's very important to both of us, that we're not silent. And that is an affirmation of our humanity, let me say. So whatever happens in court tomorrow, we will deal with it. We will not change. We will not change because of a result that comes from the court. That's up to them. Up to us is to continue our activism, to continue not to be silent in whatever way we can.
You know, if you do get that judge that would say, okay, we're giving you your passports back, and but with this surety amount, where does that money come from? I've heard that there's some people from Dublin and other places that are attempting to do some things to help you raise funds. Is that true?
Well, yeah, we did set up a GoFundMe site to help with legal expenses and other expenses, which are going to be considerable. I mean, if we do get released, we'll have to fly back to the United States and then fly back again. We do have to be here as it stands now on September 30th for a circuit court appearance, at any rate. We'll also be here for the World Beyond War conference, which is going to be taking place in Limerick. I'll give a little plug for that on September 5th and 6th, and that's going to be significant. And Ken and I will both be on a panel then. So we've had this GoFundMe site, and we've raised some funds that way. When we find out what exactly is needed, we will have to figure out ways to raise that. And that those funds will be more or less a loan to be paid back when we get our bond back, when we show up for the trial, which we will show up unless somehow we are physically prevented from.
So is that the event then in Dublin on the 19th of this month, Tariq? Isn't there a session to try to come up with some assistance?
That's on the 17th. That's a fundraiser that a group called AFRI, Action for Ireland, is putting on. And it's the same group that did that really wonderful video that people can see if they go to stopthesewars.org. There's a really excellent video about the whole Shannon thing. It's got an interview with Ken, myself, Ed Horgan, who's been involved in this for many years, and also Claire Daly, who's now a member of the European Parliament, and she is just absolutely terrific. But the video itself is excellent with a lot of background footage. So if they go to stopthesewars.org, people can see the video, and also if they want to donate to our legal fund and other expenses, I believe the GoFundMe site is still up there for donations.
And we won't get into a lot of questions about the Hague Convention and the Nuremberg trial. I mean, there's so much that the Nuremberg articles in the Geneva Convention on War. But these are going to be very important points when you do have your trial, and would be very much appreciated if we could talk to you again when that comes up. The Nuremberg principle number 6, I think, where it says the crimes herein set out are punishable as crimes under international law. You have so much of a backing there with the Nuremberg principles and even the United States Constitution. So would think about that when the time comes for the trial, to be able to discuss with us some of the arguments that you'll be coming up with. In the meantime, best of wishes to you, Tariq, and to family and friends. And maybe if you could put Ken on for a minute.
Okay, thanks so much, Jack.
I'd like to get into something, you know, more personal, Ken, and ask you about family. And if you could tell us, are there some people who would object to what you are doing? Are there friends and family who would say that this is off the wall? You know, old Ken over there taking action at age 82 when he should be home in his rocking chair.
Well, it's funny. I think I've outlived most of the friends who would have disapproved of what I'm doing. My late wife died 14 years ago, it would be 14 years in December, but I am very fortunate in having a new love in my life. And in fact, we were scheduled to leave on our honeymoon on the 22nd of April. So needless to say, her first reaction was, "What the were you thinking?" But she's very much an activist too. I think she's been arrested almost as many times as I have. So that didn't last very long.
So she's back in the U.S.?
Yeah, back in Santa Fe, New Mexico. My kids grew up in Berkeley, well, until they were in second and third grade, but they grew up going to peace marches in Berkeley and San Francisco. This was, you know, 1970 to 1973. And they continue to be activists in their own fields, so that they just as soon that I had not done something that would get me detained in Ireland for 4 months, but they're basically supportive. My daughter was very, very upset because her daughter, one of my three granddaughters, was graduating from Colorado College on the 18th of May, and I missed that, which was a huge disappointment. But, you know, aside from those inconveniences, I think they all recognized that I was doing something for good.
Yeah, rather than disappointment, they might have had some great stories to tell friends. Yeah, my grandfather is in prison or just out of prison, you know, for working for peace over in Ireland. I think they must have really felt very positive by that. That's my view.
Well, yeah, the granddaughters did. In fact, one of my granddaughters is in working on a master's of public health at BU, and she wrote me a thank you note saying that I had greatly enhanced her stature with her peers at BU.
You're listening to episode 15 of Nonviolent Direct Action. I'm host Jack Gilroy, and my guests today are Ken Mayers and Tariq Kauf, two U.S. citizens being prevented from leaving Ireland because of their civil resistance at Shannon International Airport in Ireland. So what about back in the USA? Do you know anything, maybe from your new love, your fiancé, or anyone else, as to is the story being told in Santa Fe and other places?
Yes, it was written up in the Santa Fe, New Mexican newspaper. It got good coverage. And
what about other U.S. media? How about as the New York Times?
Well, I know that back in Tariq's hometown of Woodstock, it was a front page article. I don't think it's made mainstream news. We've been interviewed by several different podcasts, and both in Ireland and here, but we haven't gotten nearly as much coverage in the United States as we have in Ireland, which is not surprising, certainly. I mean, we've been, not only did that wonderful video get made by the folks at AFRI, but we've been in the Irish Times, which is the, you know, the leading newspaper here, and in the Irish Examiner and the Independent.
Could you mention for people about the video that AFRA did for you? They could get that on YouTube, can't
yes,
they?
Yes, they can. Well, they can get it on the web. And as Tariq said, the easiest way to get to it probably would be to stopthesewars.org, where it's featured in the front page and then linked directly to it.
That's good. And, of course, Veterans for Peace, I think they're carrying that as well.
Right.
Video, probably just by people just Googling or just go to YouTube.
If they go to the AFRI website, which is afri.ie, they could do it that way as well.
AFRI.ie.
We've been interviewed on the radio here and on television. We were up at Doonbeg, which is the town where Trump's hotel is. We were up at Doonbeg the day that Trump arrived, and we were interviewed by Virgin Media and by RTE, which is their national radio network. So that we've been getting a lot of exposure, and people come up to us and say, oh, saw you on television, well done.
What's your take as to why this has not hit mainstream USA media?
Well, for the same reason that our peace activities in the United States rarely make it onto the media. It's because the media is owned by huge corporations, frequently with links to the military-industrial complex. And in our American media, for the most part, peace is a dirty word.
We found that out for sure. I remember as a high school teacher trying to get a peace studies going, and that was considered to be almost pinko at the time. They would say, you know, this is Cyberkami kind of
action. That's right.
So I know where you're at. It hasn't changed an awful lot over the decades. So tell us a little bit, if you can. I think people would be interested to know what your plan is once this does get the trial as to why you would take in issues such as the Nuremberg Principles or the United Nations Charter or the United States Constitution, any one or more of those. How would they fit into your argument that I'm sure that you've already thought about preparing or in the process of preparing?
Well, the defense in the precedent cases, and particularly in the case of the Plowshares 5, was what they call the necessity defense. The necessity defense is a defense that says, while we may have violated elements of a statute, we did it in order to prevent a greater crime. This defense has occasionally been successful in the United States. It has a much stronger history in Europe than it does in the United States. And as I say, the Plowshares 5 were unanimously acquitted on the basis of their necessity defense. And the reason why these other documents come into play is because those are documents, the Geneva Conventions, the Hague Convention, the UN Charter, are all elements of international law which impose obligations on a state that claims to be neutral, as Ireland does. And those obligations mean that if troops belonging to a belligerent country set foot in your country, you're supposed to intern them away from the hostilities until the hostilities have ceased. Aircraft are not supposed to overfly a neutral country. Aircraft are not supposed to land or be serviced in a neutral country, aircraft belonging to a belligerent. And the basis for this is international law, as I said, in the Hague Convention of 1907 and the UN Charter. They're all involved in the UN Convention Against Torture, of course, which comes in regarding the extraordinary rendition flights. So these would all be elements used in the necessity defense in our case.
I should, instead of making a statement, should have asked you instead, do you think it will be better to have international law on trial in an Irish court or in an American court?
Oh, I'd say the odds are better in an Irish court. There have been cases in the United States, some fairly significant cases, where the necessity defense has been heard and has been effective. But what happens usually in the United States, in most cases, is the judge refuses to allow the defense to present the necessity case.
Yeah, I personally speaking, it was just a few years ago that I was one of 31 who decided I would not take a plea bargain. And I went to trial in Syracuse, New York, and I spent a fair amount of money to get one of the leading international attorneys out of the Midwest to fly to Syracuse. She had her testimony all set. And the second day of the jury trial, the judge said he would not allow her. He made the decision that he would not allow that she speak. So that's not unusual in the United States. We knew that it would be possible that that would happen. But it seems like that would maybe not happen in Ireland, where they seem to respect the international law, versus the United States that takes international law is sort of a joke. I mean, they just don't pay any attention to it.
Yeah, interestingly enough, in Mary Kelly's case, the first person who did what we did back in 2003, as I mentioned, she was found guilty in the court of first instance. In that case, the judge did not allow necessity defense witnesses to appear, and that was part of the basis for her appeal, and she won in the appeals court.
So you guys really have an awful lot cut out for yourself. So what? Tell us about what do you do day in, day out? I know you must go to the pub on occasion to visit friends, etc., but what are some of the daily life features that you and
I'll give you an example. This week, I'll admit, it was a little busier than most weeks. But on Monday, we went down to Dublin, which we've been doing the last several weeks. We'll go down to Dublin on Monday, stay with friends who live on the outskirts of Dublin. And then on Tuesday, for several weeks, we've gone and protested in front of the Parliament building with our banners, similar to the banner we were carrying when we were arrested on the field at Shannon. It says, U.S. veterans say, respect Irish neutrality, U.S. war machine out of Shannon. So we do that, and for the last couple of weeks also, we've gone to the Prime Minister's office before he arrives in the morning with our banners to do our protest there. That was on Tuesday, that was yesterday. Today we were in district court in the morning until early afternoon. Tomorrow we'll be going to the High Court for the bail. Friday we will be hanging banners on a bridge in Shannon and then attending a play in Dublin that's about some 11 of the people who were tragically affected by the troubles between the North and the South in Ireland. Saturday, there's a pro-Palestinian rally in Limerick that we're going to be going to. So we keep busy doing the things we do, hanging banners off of bridges and protesting in official places and so forth. And
maybe we should get a duplicate of that banner. I've seen it online, and it is pretty vivid to hang over some bridges down near New York City or even up here in upstate New York where I live. It might be informative on an interstate highway overpass. I think it's a great idea.
Interestingly enough, David Swanson tried to hire some billboards here in Ireland to publicize the upcoming conference that's going to be in Limerick in October, and the billboard companies refused to do it because they said it was political. But we've got a 13.5-foot by 7-foot banner that we hang from the bridges, which in effect is a billboard that goes up and down, and that made the Irish Times.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, well, that, you know, if you can get photographs like that in, then it's nice. It's free advertising. I'd like to ask Tariq a word or two about his sort of family connections back in the USA as well, and then we'll probably wrap it up. Tariq, I wanted to ask you before a question about situations back in the USA, family. Sometimes people will say, what do your relatives and friends and others think about you doing stuff like this? You know, I'm wondering if you could tell us what's going on back home and what friends and family have to say about your reaction.
I guess I'm very fortunate because my partner, Ellen Davidson, is also and has been an activist for many years, and she's a real force behind getting the paper out. Peace in our times. So she is very supportive, but of course would like to see me back home, because while I'm gone, also besides the fact that she misses me, a lot of the work of doing the paper and getting it mailed out, so forth and so on, picking it up at the printers, falls on her shoulders. And I'm also very fortunate in that my daughter is at least as progressive as I am. My daughter's 27 and lives in California, and has always been supportive and proud of what her dad does. So I get a lot of support from back home, from relatives and friends both, because they understand who I am and why I do what I do, and many of them do the same thing. Many of them are activists themselves, so my daughter is, and so is my partner.
So again, thank you for your service, Tariq, and thank you for your service, Ken. To us, you're the people who need the medals. You're the really honorable individuals trying to prevent crimes, high crimes. So thanks again, Tariq. And now an update since this interview was recorded. The Circuit Court of Ireland has decided not to return Ken Mayer's and Tariq Kauf's passports. This means that at least until their October 2019 trial date ruling, they cannot leave Ireland. And they may not be able to leave Ireland until after their trial, which will probably take place in 2021 or 2022. You have been listening to episode 15 of Nonviolent Direct Action. I'm host Jack Gilroy, and my guest today were Ken Mayers and Tariq Kauf, two U.S. citizens being prevented from leaving Ireland because of their civil resistance at Shannon International Airport in Ireland. You can find this episode and the entire Nonviolent Direct Action series on iTunes. You can find related links on our blog, nonviolentdirectaction.blogspot.com.